Sports Day for Kia. Kia's open season continues with match-winning deals.
Great to have your company here on Sports Day. Carl Langdon, Paul Hazelby with you on this International Women's Day. We'd love to hear from you. Our core of the night, a carton of Gage Roads beer to give away. And our hot topic for Repco, for expert car air conditioning service you can rely on, you visit repcoservice.com. It has to be around the AFL. We're going to reflect on the weekend's matches, including the one Hayes and I called yesterday. Hopefully you tuned in to us on 882 6PR as we broadcast the match where the West Coast Eagles, in the end, got away with the victory. Hayes, how are you?
I'm going well. Well, Carl, great weekend. Yeah, they're good, the West Coast Eagles. Almost halfway through that second quarter, they just turned the screws and their skill level was good and they were able to really work hard defensively, led by Brad Shepherd. I thought he was one of the best players on the ground. Liam Ryan was outstanding. But more concerns up the road. The Fremantle Dockers, after a really good pre-season, the same issue reared its ugly head again. Can they score? Do they have enough key forward targets? And, of course, when Rory Lobb went down, it's going to make it very difficult for them. And then Michael Walters, with his hamstring strain, that's two of their best three key forwards. They can't afford to lose two of their best three, and it's going to be a challenge for them from here, Carl, and what they do to try and make a makeshift forward line.
Yeah, it's going to raise some questions, certainly, no doubt. Maybe some Dockers fans out there have got some ideas on 922-11882. A couple of games have been played today, Hayes, and we cast an eye earlier over the Western Bulldogs and the Melbourne clash. In the end, Western Bulldogs far too good. It was a little bit scrappy early, but they showed their class towards the end. And Marcus Bontempelli, very good. And Timmy English is going to join us tonight.
Yeah, they're outstanding, the Western Bulldogs. They're a great team to watch. And, gee, they possess the footy like no other team. If I was a midfielder around the comp, you want to play for the Western Bulldogs because you get plenty of touches, you feel good about yourself, and hopefully this year they go a little bit better than they have in the last three.
Now, Gold Coast, again, off to a fast start, Hayes. They had almost a five-goal lead, and now it is the Brisbane Lions who have wrestled the lead back, and now currently they lead by 11 points. 5 minutes to go in the third quarter. We'll keep everyone up to date with that match, but it's been an interesting ebb and flow in that one too.
Had momentum through that second quarter. It was probably the best they've ever played. Kept them basically scoreless in the second quarter, and then in this quarter, Brisbane have really hit back with, of course, the big fella Joe Danaher down there, and big news there, Carl. Cam Rayner looks like he's done his ACL. Just landed awkwardly, went straight off, and there's vision of the doctor looking at it, doing the ACL test, and you can almost read his lips. So there's a promising young player that they were hoping to get some more midfield time this year. It's going to make it a bit more difficult for them to win that elusive premiership.
I'll tell you what's been a little bit hot, and I know that you've got some thoughts on this. You'll be blown away with car air conditioning service at Repco Authorised Service. Book at repcoservice.com. Already there's talk about the injuries with the short turnaround in the pre-season, getting back into matches, extending matches out to 20 minutes plus time on. What's your thoughts on the games that you have watched over the last few days? I'll give you mine in a moment.
I think it's a load of crap, to be honest. And I know inside the clubs, they have been concerned with a delayed start to a lot of their older players through the pre-season because of how long last year went, and they have to have the mandatory 10 weeks off. Then you've got the increase in game time. So they're a bit frightened. But you look around the league, yes, there's been injuries, Carl, but they haven't been predominantly soft tissue issues. You talk about Michael Walters, still side bottoms one. I know Croden has a slight calf issue that he's working through. But outside of that, most of them have been collision injuries. You can't help that. That's footy. Rory Lobb, that was a tackle. Cam Rayner, that was an unfortunate placing of his foot where his knee buckled from underneath him. So I don't subscribe to it.
No. Well, you look at, the Fife-Zach Langdon head clash, which if we're going to get into slaps and sledges, I'll give that umpire a sledge for giving Fife your free kick. I mean, that wasn't a free kick, and nor was it a free kick against
Shepherd.
Well, it was a free kick to Shepherd, but that was against Banfield. Banfield actually ended up having impact on his knee. He came off the field. Brad Shepherd came off, had blood bleeding out of his head, but he was the bloke that actually dived across his legs. Now, the rules have been introduced to allow people who are on their feet attacking the footy and not diving across the footy to be earning the free kick. So the umpire stuffed that one up as well. And I was leaving the ground last night, as you were, and 100% the three umpire advocates were there. They totally agreed with us. So that was just a couple of examples out of the weekend. But 922-11882 is our number tonight if you'd like to join us here on the the program on Sports Day.
Across the weekend, Carl, did you change your opinion on any one team or maybe two?
Well, I got a couple of things confirmed. I reckon, like last year, I think North Melbourne and Adelaide are going to be fighting it out for the wooden spoon, sadly. Just having a look at the games that I saw all day Saturday, Hawthorn, Jacob Kaczynski was unbelievable for a young bloke who's only 20 and to kick six goals, three. And everyone say, oh, Carl, well, it was only North Melbourne. But yes, it was only North Melbourne. And I'll tell you what, to kick six goals, three in that game was an awesome performance. I like what I saw from Geelong. I thought that being older, they might be a slider. I was still brave enough to leave them in the eight. The only side I had falling outside my eight was Collingwood. But then Collingwood did take it right up to Richmond, who's the side that I've got winning the premiership. Carlton, I'm still worried about are at the crossroads and what that means for the Carlton Football Club. St Kilda, I think, can stay in the top eight. I was pleased with what I saw from GWS. I've got them in the eight at Collingwood's expense out of the teams that missed out last year. But come on, join in. Let you have your say here on the program tonight. And we'll go to Jerry first in Westminster. G'day, Jerry.
Oh, g'day, Carl. Hi, how you doing, boys?
Good.
Just listening to your call yesterday, the Eagles for Fremantle, the men's game. Is Tim Gossie's going to be doing the football with you through the year, is he?
No. No?
I was going to say thank Christ for that, because you're better off just put him on the boundary as a commentator, or buy him in a studio where he can go up and broadcast to himself. He's just so full of himself and that stupid damn laugh that he's got. I don't want him to bring you guys down, because you're one of the best commentators going around, Carl. I'm really impressed with what you do.
Tim's a lovely bloke, and I mean, he can't help the way that he laughs. I mean, that's just how he laughs.
He just can't help it, full stop. I'm just not... anyway, I'm...
You're not a fan. You don't sound like you're a fan.
He's not going to be part of your commentary team. That's the main thing, because I don't want him to bring you blokes down. But it's all about Tim Gossage when he gets hold of a microphone.
I won't be there either, Jerry.
Good on you, Jerry. Thanks for your thoughts. You're entitled to them. Look, as I said, I get on very well with Tim. He's a character. He's an entertainer. That's what he does. If you don't like his little mannerisms, that's okay. But Jerry is obviously one of those people. We can't be liked by everyone all of the time. Peter in Nedlands. G'day, Pete.
Just looking at the game yesterday, both sides stayed fit. I think they're both in with a chance, at least in the eight, if not before. I think the alley-oop kicks from the back line with the Eagles are things that still worry me a bit. Instead of the two or three handballs until the player's clear and then a long kick. But I think the most important thing I'm just going to mention is that I think the Eagles outlast most of the other teams, and particularly it wouldn't worry me playing against Richmond in a grand final, because they run so hard. But the Eagles are a brilliant tackling side, and if they cut that run off, they'll run out of puff. Because the Eagles, when they're kicking games on song and they kick accurately, takes a lot less effort over a whole period of a game by kicking the ball rather than trying to outrun the opposition. And I think that's what happened actually yesterday to a certain extent. Fremantle ran out a bit of a puff, especially in the third quarter when the Eagles really started to put the pressure on.
That's a really good call. I think they probably move the ball better than most teams by foot in the competition. And when they do that, they get a bit of a chance to rest because they're so well drilled. We saw a number of times yesterday and through the past few seasons, they like to go back and around, and the midfielders through that stage can make space for one another, have a rest. And if they do lose control of the footy, they were quick to defend. But they did stop Fremantle from getting through on a number of occasions yesterday. Geez, I'm impressed with Brad Shepherd. He was outstanding up until Michael Walters got injured, what he did in the back half. And also Liam Ryan. Now, he is now one of the best small forwards in the competition. And I would say those two, you could not afford to lose them for the West Coast Eagles, particularly probably Liam Ryan because of what he brings in that front half.
Well, he was an All-Australian, wasn't he, last year? And Brad Shepherd, correct me if I'm wrong, was All-Australian. So I think they've shown their class. So they've certainly been right up there. 922-982. Plenty of time for your calls. It's 6:15. We would love to hear from you. Slaps and sledges after this. Anything that you'd like to talk about in the wonderful world of sport. Maybe the Forces victory on the weekend. It's 20-16 over the Waratahs, and they'll be in action, of course, on Friday night here. First time in 8 years we lost the Constellation Cup in the netball to New Zealand, 45-43. It was a close one for a 3-1 defeat. And the Perth Glory pumped by Wellington Phoenix yesterday, 3-0. Top of the table, Central Coast is next on Sunday. Our Perth Glory are off the rails a little bit at the moment. You can join in. Our Wildcats, they are on fire, 87-70 victory, and they are top of the NBL Cup. If you'd like to talk about any of the other sport that unfolded over the weekend, next.
Sports Day for Kia. Kia's open season continues with match-winning deals.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Slaps and sledges shortly. Let's go to Phil in Madeley, who joins us. G'day, Phil. Hello, Phil. No? Okay, maybe Alex in Northlake. We'll try and get back to Phil. G'day, Alex.
G'day, Carl and Paul. I was on the same page as you, Carl, with that decision to give Fife a free kick with the head clashes. What you need to do is get the AFL umpiring department to provide someone on a regular basis to come onto 6PR and explain some of these decisions. We all need to be educated on why certain decisions get made.
Oh, it was just a mistake. It was just a mistake. I mean, umpires make mistakes. It's like players, you know. Players don't always kick and handball and do the right thing and miss goals and all that sort of stuff, but it was just a mistake.
It's easy with the replay, though, isn't it? I think even in the call that I think might have been Gossage that was calling it at the time, he led with Nathan Fyfe wins the free kick because it looked like early on that he arrived first to the contest. So generally it is the player that is there first, gets the benefit of the doubt with the free kick. But then you watch on the replay and you realise it was at the exact same time. And maybe it was just the momentum. So it's not an easy thing to do. And we're never, ever going to get to a situation where we get 100% right. But on the call, Carl, I raised it and you gave me a good answer. And I probably agree with you that they had time because there was time taken out of the game to get the players off the ground where it was played on the big screen. And clearly everybody at the ground, because there was a bit of booing a little bit later, knew that it was the wrong free kick paid. I just wonder, would you like ever to see them change their mind in that scenario? Not every free kick, but just when you've got time. Because you always say in sport, we've got to get the best decision or the right decision.
Well, I don't want to harp on about this, but I think I've told you for many years here on this program that if I was the umpire in the grandstand, then that would have been probably the decision in the first place. Because I think that when you actually get the opportunity to see it from the angle of the cameras, which look down on the ground rather than trying to look through, it's very difficult. And the umpires get a very different view to the one that we have perched up high. And that's why I've always advocated for an umpire in the grandstand. Now, whether that umpire gets it over the loudspeaker and stops the play and stops it or halts it, or whether they have communication to a field umpire and says, free kick, whoever it might be, West Coast or Frio, in that scenario. But I still think there is probably ways in which we could help the officials out there on the field. 922-2182 if you'd like to join in. Let's go to our slaps and sledges. Sullivan Logistics, 3 votes for storage and overnight freight. They never say no.
Kiara Bowers, what a performance. She won her 3rd best on ground out of 3 games. That is remarkable. But I have to say, Carl, that they got the wrong decision, in my opinion, and I'm just one person, but there are others that think too. Eliza Riley, Justin Chadwick and Bo McDonald were the judges, and they gave her the votes. Now, Gemma Houghton had 15 disposals, kicked 5 goals. Now, 5 goals does not happen in the AFLW very often. I think it might have been the first time that we've actually seen that. Between the Bulldogs, the West Coast Eagles, the Giants and Gold Coast, collectively, those teams kicked 7 goals across the weekend. So when a player kicks 5 goals in a game of AFLW, she should be, in my opinion, judged best afield. And the coaches thought the same. They came out today. She got all 10 votes from the coaches. And it was interesting that Bowers only got the 4 votes. So there was another 2 players that got higher votes from the coaches. But a terrific performance. She's a great player. Definitely played well. But on this occasion, 5 goals, Carl, is a big effort in AFLW. Even, I think we need to change our view, even in the men's game, and how difficult it is to kick goals in our game these days.
Well, I have to tell you, there's a young kid that's going to feature later in my top 7 for Kia because what he did on the weekend. Now, let me say this. I actually sat there and I watched because I had to go early to get my car in the car park. And I watched the whole West Coast Fremantle game. And Eagles had their chances early, but their skills are way off the mark. The one thing that they need to do is practice skill to get themselves better because right now they are nowhere near the Freo Dockers and that's why they got a pasting there. So that would be my little sledge towards the girls. There's a couple of slaps, 251, I think it was, for Cameron Green. Another 251. I mean, I gave you a bit of a tweet out there. I said, how good's Cameron Green going? He's 186 not out at stumps. He goes back out there the next day and he cranks out another 70 before he gets out. And he's just been in incredible form. So congratulations to him. The Wildcats, you've got to give them a slap because you, I think, like a few others at the time, leading in, they were a little bit up and down their form. You didn't know how well they'd go in the Melbourne hub. They're on top of the NBL Cup, so we've got to give them a slap. And I think that we have to give our Western Force a slap as well for winning their first game back into Super Rugby, and let's hope that they can continue in that vein when they play against the Melbourne Rebels this Friday, 12th of March. Tickets available at Ticketmaster right here at HBF Stadium. Hayes, let's hope it's a big crowd.
Absolutely. It was good to get that win. I'm not sure whether it's a good gauge because the team that they beat have been really struggling in recent times coming off two losses, but a good chance for them to get their fans here and go really hard this weekend. But Carl, a lot of injuries that we've spoken about, we haven't mentioned yet, but of course, James Frawley, he retired, he came back. Maybe he should have stayed out because he's out for 10 weeks with a hamstring tendon. There is another one. Connor Rose, he's got to go have some quick surgery on his foot, should miss 4 weeks. Jay Lockhart is in hospital as we speak with a testicle injury. Cam Rayner, we spoke about with a knee injury. And Aaron Norton today with a forearm issue.
If you're James Frawley, you just wave the flag now. Ta-da, the goose. Like, there's no use going on. I mean, that's what Nathan Buckley did. It finished his career. I mean, a hamstring tendon is very different to just a fibre in the hamstring. So, mate, that's wave the flag. He'd retired anyway. So I just reckon they'd be... can they replace him? I think they possibly can. They'd be able to, wouldn't they?
Absolutely.
Because we're still in that window of opportunity. So that's what I'd be doing if I was him. Unfortunately, it's not going to be nice. And what about the MRP? Zach Williams, that one match sanction, rough conduct against Hunter Clark, and he finds himself on the sideline. Unless he appeals, but he's got an offer of a week and he was probably lucky.
Yeah, he was lucky. Left the ground, head high contact, and there was certainly some damage done to the player's head. So I agree with that. The MRP get a good chance to set the precedent for the rest of the players this year. McGovern, he had no case to answer. And Darcy Tucker, $2,000, rough conduct against Luke Shuey. This was the tackle that, in the end, there was an arm that was released, but it was looking dangerous on the way down. That probably is the reason that he was able to escape from missing weeks, but Luke Shuey was okay. And Luke Shuey, even though he's missed some of the preseason, I thought his game, alongside Dom Sheed and Andrew Gaff yesterday, they were the prime movers.
All right, let's go to Phil in Madeley. We found him. G'day, Phil.
Oh, g'day, boys. How you going? Just talking about Glory, the old boys, mate. I think they're looking a bit tired, Carl. Hopefully that German guy's playing soon. We need some decent defender at the back there. We're really struggling at the moment. Really silly mistakes. Young teams. Could happen this year, but unfortunately. Need to batten down the hatches a little bit. They were a bit flat yesterday. I was a bit worried about them yesterday, to be honest with you.
Yeah, but I mean, they were doing so well, and they'd really sort of changed, and like all of a sudden they were looking a lot more resilient.
Carl, they had a pretty crap, rubbish first half at home. Mm-hmm. Really, they were really flat on home against Central Coast. Came back in the second half, had a couple of dips, had a couple of really good chances, really. Steins missed a sitter that should have, and Foreoli missed one, and he scored one. So it happened. So we surely got a 2-2 draw away, but they were flat even last week at home. But in the last half an hour, really, they need to really step it up a bit, Carl. And they're really struggling in the back. They really need that German defender. They'll need some like a proper stopper there to organise the back, because at the moment they're a bit of a rabble.
All right, good on you, Phil. Thank you very much for giving us your insights. Certainly well in the running to win the Core of the Night prize, a carton of beer, thanks to Gage Rhodes. G'day, Mouse.
Hi, Carl and Paul. How are you?
Good.
Now, I heard you talking about, while I was driving to Sienna's here, I heard you talking about the weekend. Now, just before I was going to say what I was going to say, a lot of people whinge that they can't get up close and personal with coaches, but at Randburg Swan on Friday night at 4 o'clock, they could meet Adam Simpson and Justin Longyear, hear their comments and actually ask questions with them and mingle with them. And it's just $60 for a midi and food. How good a deal is that?
Sounds
Port Adelaide, Port Adelaide, let me tell you something. Port Adelaide, what I saw on the weekend, out of all the teams I saw, Port Adelaide would have to be the best team in the league at the moment. They've got about 33 blokes that could go through their team at the moment. The midfield, the forward, the back. Ali has been fantastic. What a pickup. And for Archie, whatever his name is.
Fantasia.
Say that again, man.
Fantasia.
He was fantastic. But what my point is, quite a few times on the coverage, they kept saying how Port Adelaide's list management was so good. Then they kept saying how bad Adelaide's list management was so good. So really you've got to have the right people in there to get the right job done. Otherwise, if you don't, you don't get anywhere. So I agree 100% with you, but not many people pick up on Port Adelaide, but they could be the team to beat this year, I reckon.
Well, Paul Hazelby agrees. He's got them as premiership favourites right now. And what day is the coaches together down at the Rambler on Swan?
It's 4 o'clock on Friday. It's a sundowner, so we did it like that so people can, you know, have lunch before they go for dinner. And obviously the venue is pretty full already, but there's still tickets available down there. But how often would you get Adam Simpson, Justin Longmuir for a casual chat? It's not an official thing or anything like that, so anyone can just book in and meet the people. How good an idea is that?
Hey? No, it's a good idea. So I look forward to seeing a few people get along there. I'll tell you what's even a better idea on International Women's Day is when we've got a couple of quality ladies, and we've got a couple of quality ladies coming your way very soon. In fact, after we clear a commitment, we're going to be joined by Jan Cooper. Jan Cooper has been a pioneer when it comes to women in football. We'll hear her story. And then after 7 o'clock tonight, we're going to have a yak to Christina Matthews as well. So looking forward to hearing a little bit about her story. If you'd like to ring us for a slap and a sledge, you're more than welcome. For Sullivan Logistics, your trusted storage and overnight freight experts. Sullivan Logistics, in it for the long haul. Welcome back to Sports Day, International Women's Day, and it's been a big focus for 6PR for the whole day, and it's great to have Jan Cooper as the first of two very special ladies that we've got on the program tonight. Christina Matthews will join us after 7 o'clock tonight. But Jan, how are you tonight? Carl and Paul with you. How are you going?
Yeah, good, thanks, Carl and Hayes and listeners.
Now, just take me back to where things started out for you, right from the very start when you were a little girl.
Yeah, I used to follow my dad around when he was coaching and administrating at either Mines Rovers in the Goldfields or Swan Districts back in the metro area. And at first it was just, I think, because I wanted to spend time with him. And then over the years, I realised that I was actually in love with the game itself. And from there, yeah, my interest has just turned into a passion. So
now, you've been described as a trailblazer. You've been a wonderful ambassador for the game of Australian rules football for women, for ladies. When did your passion to go down that path start?
Well, it was a bit of an accident, really. I think it was only because Colin West and Grant Dorrington, who were both working for the WA Football Commission at the time, knew that I was passionate about football because they used to work with my husband, Ross Luckman. And so when they were sort of being visionary and thinking, well, it's about time we got the other gender involved, so who should we turn to help us with that? And they thought of me. Thank goodness. And so they got me on board for a couple of days a week with the WA Football Commission. And because of that, I got to go to the National Carnival with the WA Senior Women's Team. And because I'm a little bit opinionated, I saw a whole lot of things there that I thought could be done better. So I wrote an email to David Matthews at the AFL and said, you know, how about you think about doing this, that and the other thing for the Senior Women's Carnival, and here's some options about solutions to those kinds of concerns and issues that I had. So then he said, well, how about you do the national role, and the rest is history, really.
So, Jan, when it comes to your push, you're one of the driving forces behind the women's national competition that we've now seen unfold, and it's including new teams this year, and a lot of those new teams, for the last couple of years, have struggled a little bit. But to see the game grow the way that it has, it's been described that you were doing things bubbling away behind the scenes to get it to where it has. What were you doing? How did you convince people that they need to take a chance on this?
Was actually quite tough, Carl, yep. I've got to say. Mm. And it wasn't just me. It was state-based colleagues as well. But it was actually quite difficult to sell the idea that this was the right thing to do for the industry, that we got hit with a lot of stereotypical comments like, well, won't women lose their femininity if they play this brutal sport? And it's like, well, what's your version of femininity? Because mine is being empowered, doing whatever they feel they want to challenge themselves at, contented. So what's yours? What stops you from thinking that a woman can't play this game? then, you know, I was thrown in with, well, the business model. What's your business model for this? And it's like, well, that's not my area of expertise. That's up to you to go out and seek more sponsorship or sell it to people to help fund it. But I knew intuitively that because of all the women and girls I'd spoken to across the nation, that this would end up being a viable situation, and it was going to actually enhance what was already on the field, because if you include both genders, you're going to get increased membership, you're going to get more fans to the game. The participation in itself was going to bring more people to community clubs, more volunteers. So it just seemed like a no-brainer, apart from the fact that women and girls wanted to play the code, and that's what they were telling us. So, yes, it's not a viable financial proposition yet, but I'm sure it will be sooner rather than later.
You make a good point there, because I talked to my friends at Northampton and they just believe the football club has changed so much for the better. With a girls' team now, they've even started to have a reserves girls' team. That's how good they're going. The numbers are there. And what that has done to the whole club back there in community, and that's just one country town, that's happening all around Australia. That must make you feel proud that what you originally set out to do has been achieved.
Oh, absolutely, Hayes. Like it blows my head, like even this year with COVID and everything, amateurs, for example, Perth Football League started with 6 women's teams 4 years ago. This year they've had 51 registrations already, and we're still quite a way off the start of the season. And you think that gets duplicated across every capital city, across major country towns. And, I mean, you're talking about Northampton, it's only a little wee town. Mm. Like, it just does my head in, but it doesn't surprise me. It's just the expansion, the quickness of it has probably done my head in, because it took so long to kind of even get the first competitions organised and to convince the decision makers that they should be doing this. But now that they've seen the integration and what it does for a community club in particular and what it does for families, you know, it just gives them a common connection, because now their whole family can be involved in the game in some shape or form. So the rapidity of it is the surprise for me, not the fact that women and girls are passionate about being involved.
I was reading an article today saying that the AFL originally floated the AFLW season to commence this year. Is that the case? And can you give us some insight into the timing? Were they ahead of their time? Were they late to the party, in your opinion?
No. I actually led the vision around that. In 2010, all my state-based colleagues and I sat in a room and went, so what's our vision for female football? And we thought that if we had 250,000 women and girls running around on grass, we would have the depth of talent to be able to start a national league. And we thought at that stage it might look like 6 teams. And so projecting what the growth was like at the time in 2010, we thought that would take us another 10 years. So unannounced, when Gillon McLachlan in May 2016 went, well, I think we should start the National League next year in 2017, I had heart palpitations and so did my state colleagues, because we went, what? We're not ready for this. And then after 5 minutes, I went, yes, we are. Look at the growth. At that point, we were nearly at 500,000 women and girls running around. So we actually surpassed what we thought should occur. And so, yes, it was a bit of a scramble to get the licences out and get the whole competition sorted. But thank you, Gillon. To me, it was the best thing that he could have done to bring it forward and have that confidence in us to get the league off and running. So, yes, while the newer teams are probably struggling, because I think on the weekend it was top 6 versus bottom 6 and they were pretty one-sided affairs, but the top 3 versus the bottom 3 in the first year were also very one-sided affairs. So I know that the expansion teams will get there because of the quality of coaching and the depth of talent that exists. So I'm not concerned about the one-sided results on the weekend at all.
Jan, Gill had no choice to make that announcement in 2016 because you were 2015 Football Woman of the Year. He had no choice. You'd already headlocked him in the corner. That's what I heard. Eh? Is that true?
Oh, I'm not sure about headlocking, yeah, but I certainly had lots of conversations, and he wasn't the only one. Like, I virtually ambushed them, Carl. Yeah. I would be in a conference or whatever, and I'd go, right, well, you're not letting me meet with you, so I'll just, once you finish your keynote, I'll run across the room and ambush you and ask, you know, what are you doing? What can you do next? This is what we need. What are you going to do? You know, what timeline? And so I did that with a lot of the key decision makers to try and get things going. So I know it was almost a bit embarrassing sometimes, but I'm not ashamed of that at all. I think it ended up coming to fruition, obviously, because maybe those conversations did cause some awareness raising in the people that I was talking to.
It was meant to be, because the irony of that decision, had we have waited to 2020 and COVID reared its ugly head, I suggest they may have put that back a few more years with the financial constraints.
Yeah, and we, you know, risk management around a pandemic is right on the bottom line in small font. So, yeah, you're quite right, Hayes, I think. And as it's turned out, I think the AFL has done an extraordinary job in making sure that the girls haven't had to go in a hub, because, you know, they're not full-time footballers. They're actually full-time workers and students. And if they had have gone into a hub, who knows how that would have impacted them mentally, let alone financially. So, they've done a really good job in that respect to keep the season going.
All right, then. Let's put the vision hat back on. What's next? When are they going to be full-time? And, you know, what's your ideal scenario in the next 5 to 10 years?
It's a really good question. You're right, it does have to be full-time footballers. And so do the staff have to be full-time too, because in most clubs there aren't too many full-time staff members working on AFLW. So that needs to also change. The soft cap needs to increase to actually make sure that AFLW is resourced the way it needs to be resourced. And I love that they are charging people to come through the gates this year as a bit of a trial to see, you know, who really is dinkum about supporting AFLW. And it would appear early days, but it would appear that I haven't got all the data in front of me yet, but most of the AFLW clubs have increased their membership this year, even, you know, due to the fact that Victorians can only play each other at the moment, and we're going across country to the, you know, far-flung cities of Australia to play our games. But the fans have hung in there and have actually increased their membership. So full-time, hopefully, in the next 5 years for staff and players. I don't think the other four clubs that aren't yet in AFLW are 5 years away. I think they're a lot further away, because the depth of talent still needs to keep growing. And I don't think we can rely on cross-coders and the Irish to provide, you know, player list positions necessarily, because it takes them a while to get into the game. There's still a lot of work to be done locally talent-wise, and then go from there.
Jan, you're a legend. Thank you for joining us on International Women's Day. Hayes and I here on 82.6BR, we wanted to get you on and recognise the great work that you have done. And it's a pleasure having you on the program. Take care of yourself, and we'll have a chat another time.
Thanks very much, guys. Really appreciate it. Good night, listeners.
See you later. Jan Cooper here on Sports Day. What a sensational lady, Hayes.
One of the most influential, Carl, when you talk about women's sport in this country, and knowing a lot of those girls that she dealt with and how hard she pushed through those times to get the competition up. There's so much respect for her. But who are the most influential women in sport in this country right now? We want to hear from you.
922-11882 is our number. We'll take your calls up.
Sports Day for Kia. Kia's open season continues with match-winning deals.
Gee, Brisbane have turned the game around against the Gold Coast. They're almost 5 goals down. Now they're 5 goals in front, 17-9 to 11-10. Still 5 minutes to play in that game. We'll keep you up to date with that. Earlier today, it was the Western Bulldogs. Too good for Melbourne. Most influential women in sport. Come on, we've got a $50 carton of Gage Rhodes beer to give away. We would love to hear from you. Just having a chat to Jan Cooper. We are going to have a chat in the next hour to another very influential lady in Christina Matthews, but we will have some more time time after 7 o'clock to take your calls. But, Hayes, you're waving your arms around.
Well, Peggy O'Neill, for me, what she's done to that Richmond Football Club, and I know Brendan Gale's been there in the CEO position, but she came in at a troubled time and they've got 3 out of the last 4. And I think every other club is looking at their business model, trying to work out what the success formula is for that club. So she would be mine right now.
Sam Mostyn also is a director up there at the Sydney Swans, of course. And then you have a look at the number of Belinda Clark did so much great work at Cricket Australia. Kitty Chiller is an AOC member, and I think she heads up another department too in the world of sport. And then you have a look at the influential women that are doing some great stuff on the field. So on or off the field, doesn't matter. Just throw in your nomination. You could win that Gage Roads beer that we've got to give away tonight. And the Kia Sorento winner of the Car of the Year is the Kia Sorento. So it's a fantastic vehicle, and get in and drive one of those today. 922 11 882 is our number. Now, Hayes, just quickly before we move on to other things, still no news yet. We've had some late touch with Freo, but still no news yet on the extent of the knee injury to Rory Lobb.
No, I understand that they haven't got the results just yet, so we'll see what happens with that. But what are you expecting, Carl? They were quite confident that it wasn't an ACL, and they normally...
Oh, I'd be glad, mate. Be so glad.
8 to 10 weeks would be a good result.
Well, two would be good. That'd be a good result. 8 to 10, mate, your season's half over, and it's really hard to get back after you have a knee injury of something that's quite serious that keeps you out for that long. You can't do the work that you need to do on your legs. Hard to get back into the tempo. So, you know, when you're out for 8 to 10 weeks, it's really tough to get back.
What do you do now? They had issues scoring last year. They lose one of their best contested marking players. Matt Tabernacle is a little bit undone. We saw Tracy, who looks like he'll develop in time, but it's a big ask for him to play a massive role in his first season. We've been told that Fife may spend more time, and he looked pretty good in the second half in that position. But they do have a lot of defenders. Alex Pearce got through the game, but was a bit ginger today with the same injury, his ankle. Of course, we saw Hamlin come back. We've got Griffin Logue still to come back into the team. So they do have defenders. If there was one that you would suggest, Carl, who would you throw in?
For me right now, I'd be going Pearce, because I just think that Cox looks really settled down back. Hamlin has shown us his class there. He's a premiership player there. I just think that Pearce is the bloke who could be swung forward. I've seen him play forward before, and he's done pretty well. Let's go to Richard before we head to the news. G'day, Richard.
How you going, Carl and Hayes?
We're good.
Hey, you're talking about women in sport. Jackie Pereira, Australian forward in the hockey, she completely changed the game for women's sport in hockey. She's just become an absolute brilliant forward that's scored over 100 goals for Australia.
And a very worthwhile nominee. Do you know what she's doing these days, Richard?
I think she's coaching in South Africa.
Oh, right. Okay. Because, you know, I was just thinking about, Liz Cambage and the influence that she had in basketball as well. And you just, you could go on and on and on. Lauren Jackson. Very, very good. Good on you, Richard. Thanks for your call. We've got to clear a commitment. We'll come back. We'll tell you what's coming up after the news. In fact, you can ring us and register and get in the queue to win the beer. That's what you can do. Welcome back to Sports Day. Great to have this man. He's been playing footy today, earlier today, and it was the Western Bulldogs victorious over the Melbourne Football Club, 15-16 to 10 goals 7. And Timmy English joins us here on the program. Hayes, g'day, Timmy. How you going, mate?
Yeah, good, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
How'd you pull up, buddy, after that one today?
Yeah, pretty good. It was nice to get another run in, and with the longer quarters, it's nice to get a bit of that exposure to the fatigue levels that you get in footy. So, I've pulled up pretty well, which is always nice.
Bit of a different role for you this year. Steph Martin coming into the team, of course, will share the ruck duties with you today. And I saw you go forward a few times. 1-3 could have been a big day out. But what are you expecting from the coach this year with your own position?
I think a lot of flexibility through my own position, whether that's being able to go into the ruck at different stages. And I started up in the ruck for this game, and then was able to get forward. And after Nortz went out of the game, was able to play sort of as a key forward. So I think having Steph is a great addition for the club, and a really good addition for me. And I think it'll be a flexible role between us both.
How much time are you spending on your goal kicking? Because last year I think you kicked more points than goals, and 1-3 again today. Is it something that you're putting a lot of time into?
I couldn't do any more goal kicking if I tried, I reckon. It must have been the breeze that Eddie had that got me tonight. But No, it was nice playing under the roof again. Unfortunately, didn't convert with my set shots, but I'll go back and work on a few things in my routine, and should be able to hopefully saving them all for the season.
Now, Tim, your blokes handle the footy a lot. 419 disposals today, and I just look at some of the numbers: McRae 39, Daniel 34, the Bont 32 and three goals, Dunkley 32, Liberatore 31, Hunter 27. Is this something that you pride yourselves on, because you do handle the ball more than most teams in the competition?
I don't think so. I think we just try and use our numbers in the most effective way that we can around stoppages, and whether that's using our numbers by hand or whether that's using it by foot as well. So if we have that space, we like to move the ball forward and into our forwards and give them an opportunity. But if we can get a better look from someone in a better position, then we're happy to give that option and let them make the decision from there.
Great response today from Josh Dunkley, 32 disposals, 11 tackles as well. And he was put under the pressure earlier on the week from his own coach, who said he was just going basically in the first game that he played. But how was it when he rocked up? When a player openly says they want to leave your club, is it a little bit standoffish between clubs, the players and him when he returns?
No, not at all. We understand that that's sort of how footy is, getting a little bit more towards that these days. And as players, we love having Josh in our team, and we all love playing with him. So for him to look at that opportunity, we don't take it personally or anything. So, we're rapt to have him at the club, and, it was really good and effective tonight.
Now that you are this key forward, who do you love having the ball in their hands when they're coming towards you? Because you've got Caleb Daniel, who's one of the best short kicks in the AFL. And of course, Marcus Bontempelli, very good at finding a target as well. But outside of those two, there may be somebody else. But who do you love?
It's hard to pick one. I have my roommate. I'll give him a shout-out. So Pat Lipinski. Norts and I always talk at home about how we love that connection from Paddy. So, I'll give Paddy the shout out.
He actually did kick straight today, didn't he? Your mate with his three goals, one, your roommate. So he might be able to teach you a thing or two. Only joking. But when it comes to a few of the young guys, like he's only 22, you look at Bailey Smith, mate. What an awesome player he's become in a very short period of time. Last year, I thought he was exceptional, and he's still only 20 years of age. He's certainly done a fair bit in his short career thus far.
Yeah, well, I don't think he's missed a game either. So that's a massive positive for him as well. It shows how much time and effort he puts into his body. And I think you can see the results of that on Instagram if you've ever checked out his Instagram page.
The girls love him.
But yeah, that's true. And why wouldn't they? He's such an awesome player. He plays his role perfectly. And I think you always get that competitive spirit and that competitive fight, which is sort of something that might separate him from some of those guys in the same sort of age bracket, and having that confidence in himself to be able to take the game on is another thing that sort of stands out to me.
You mentioned your other mate, your WA mate, your forward mate now in Aaron Norton. He was involved in a bit of an incident today. How is he? Has he had his scans, and was it the forearm that he's looking at?
Yeah, I think as a forearm, he might have just got a knock on the forearm. I think Bevo said he's fine, so he'll be right. He'll be a little bit sore over the next coming days, but I'm sure he'll be fine for round one.
What's your expectation, Tim? I think that personally, I've had you up there in the top four the last couple of years, that you've underachieved. How do you feel?
As a club, we've obviously pushing and striving to make the best of our opportunities. And I think occasionally we've let games slip that we shouldn't have. So I think it's more around that mentality of approaching every game like we can win and like we should win. So I think we're a strong side, and I think you can see that across all three lines. And I think for us, it's just about playing consistently and making us gel together and getting that chemistry built. And hopefully we can go into the finals again at the end of this year.
And clearly you've got some depth there with Jason Johannesson missing out today, playing in the reserves.
Yeah, we have we do have good depth, and have a pretty relatively healthy list as well. So competitions for spots is always tough at a footy club coming off a pre-season. But yeah, I think JJ was awesome today in the VFL game. So look for him to take that in his stride and improve on a few things. And I'm sure he'll be back before you know it.
And how are you going with your size? Of course, long term, you probably see yourself going back to that full-time ruck when Martin does eventually retire. But obviously, as a young player, got pushed around a little bit with your body weight. But how much have you developed and how much more do you need to put on, do you think?
I think it's just a work in progress. I'm always going to have little goals that I want to achieve with my body. At this stage, I'm pretty happy with where I'm at for the progress I've made over the off-season, especially in that role of forward. I think having that mobility is a big thing. And I'm just going to get more confident with my body and more confident in those sort of one-on-one ruck contests throughout time and through experience. So I think I've got a little way to go, and I'll never properly reach where I want to reach because I always want to improve. But looking to this season, I'm pretty confident at this stage.
And you've still got another midfielder to come into that group too, Carl Adam Treloar, of course, played reserves today. What has he brought to the football club? I know he had 20 disposals from limited minutes today, but coming across from Collingwood, have you seen anything from him that's really helped the group mature?
Yeah, I think he's been really good in terms of his sort of leadership role. He's sort of come in and he knows he's one of the older players in the side, and having a leader come from another club, he gives you a sort of a different look at things and notices different things. So it's been really good having him. He's been really good in the gym as well. So yeah, he's had a really positive influence on the group.
Can you win the flag?
Oh, it's a pretty tough question. Hopefully. That's obviously the goal of every club going into the season. But we'll just sort of focus on round one, first of all. And, yeah, from there, we'll just go week by week, I reckon.
Good on you, mate. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Take care. Look after yourself. Look forward to seeing you in action in a couple of weeks' time.
Thank you. Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Carl.
Good on you. Timmy English here on Sports Day. Very good young player and certainly made his presence felt there today. We'll clear a commitment on the other side. We will come back with more of Sports Day after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. Great to have your company. We had a chat to Jan Cooper in the first hour and we're having a chat to another wonderful lady who has done so well in her career on International Women's Day. A lady that's been very kind to us since taking up the senior role as CEO of our West Australian Cricket Association there at the WACA. And we're speaking of Christina Matthews, who joins us here on Sports Day. Welcome. How are you?
I'm pretty good, thank you very much.
Now, for those that might not know, where did things start for you when you decided to take on, I suppose, some of the senior roles that you're involved in today?
Oh, look, I think, well, I've always been involved in sport as a participant, and it wasn't long after I left school that I thought I should try and get a job in sport. I always thought they were my people. And I loved, you know, the water cooler talk about the footy on the weekend or the cricket, depending if it was summer or winter. So, yeah, almost over 30 years ago now, and then I moved into being a professional sports administrator and made my way through various sports and positions, and here I am.
You've been one of the trailblazers, there's no doubt about that, but do you think there's enough at the moment, women in central positions in sporting clubs, organisations, or even on boards?
Oh, look, I think there could always be more. There's definitely not enough women on sports boards. We're making some progress, but I think until we get sort of 50-50, we're really not being serious about it. I think there's a growing number of women in senior executive positions in professional sport, but one of the problems we face in professional sport is people tend to get jobs and not leave them, unlike in other industries where there's a, you know, 3, 4, or 5 year turnaround. Jobs in strong sports are rarities, and so when someone gets them, you're going to have to pry them out with a crowbar.
There is a lot more women these days, though, Christina. I mean, I've just seen the girls take over, to be totally honest, and it's great. And I think the involvement at all levels of the game. When I played football, junior football, in the Hills Association in Parkerville when I was 15, had a coach, and her name was Mrs. Bone, and she coached us to a premiership. So I got a very early understanding of what female passion was like in sport, rather than them just screaming from the sidelines, to actually be out there involved on game day. And I look at Carla Brain and Joanna Corbra, I look at Joanna Davies and Kate Mort. I mean, these are all ladies that are on your executive team.
I think that's one of the reasons we've had success, is we have a nice mixture of gender, but also cultural backgrounds, and everybody contributes in a different way. It makes it fun to go to work, and it's nice to be able to give some other women opportunities to make their mark.
How challenging was it, sorry, for you when you, say, chose to go down this path? I mean, did you find that you were, you know, trying to knock blokes over to get the roles, or did you have to work twice as hard to get roles? Were you accepted? Can you just take me through your own personal experience there?
Oh, look, I worked for a long time for what was Women's Cricket Australia before they merged with Cricket Australia, and I was often spoken to about being a great female administrator. I was always pigeonholed into being good at working with women's sport. Even today, people always go first to what's happening with women's game rather than talking about the sport as a whole. So I think people find it difficult to understand that you contribute to the sport as a whole, not just the gender that you happen to be part of. So, you know, there's been challenges along the way, but one of the opportunities you have is to educate people and to help them learn the sort of language that's appropriate and how important language is in changing people's perceptions.
The last 12 months have been crazy for everybody around the world, but 12 months ago to the day, the World Cup at the MCG, and I was watching the footage today. It's unbelievable, the girls singing on the stage with Katy Perry at the end. It's one of the most iconic moments in sport. Have you noticed since then a growth in the game coming from moments like that in terms of some of the growth and the grassroots sports?
Oh, there's definitely been a growth. It's amazing that by the end of that week, 12 months ago, COVID had taken hold in Australia. And I'm really pleased that cricket stood firm, you know, when summer came around, to make sure that our competitions moved ahead, and that AFL is doing that this year. I think AFL learned a lesson when they quickly cut off AFLW last year. And I think if they had their time again, they would have tried to get to the end of that competition, particularly as it robbed Fremantle of a potential premiership. But I think having major sports, of which footy and cricket are, on telly with women playing is such an inspiration to young girls, and it can't help but grow the game. And even though all sports had a difficult time over the last 12 months, we see that part of the sport continue to grow.
Now, I know you were a lady that was born in Kew, and you played all your cricket in Victoria, New South Wales and the ACT,
yeah.
But surely you must be West Australian now. I mean, you've been fighting for Western Australia so hard. You've been lobbying with our state government to bring more cricket matches to the great venues that we have here. Is it running through your blood yet, the West Australian part of you, or not?
Well, I think, put it this way, I'm not looking to go back east anytime soon.
Ooh.
Whether I'm working at the WACA or not. I think it's very important when you move that you adopt the loyalty of the place you now live. I was the same when I moved to Sydney from Melbourne. I'm not someone who kind of thinks, oh, I can't wait to go back home. To me, home is wherever you've chosen to be. I love living in Perth, and I love the opportunities I've had to see a lot of Western Australia, and I'm a passionate supporter of everything Western Australia, much to the frustration of Cricket Australia at times. But I realise how difficult it is over here to really make your mark when you're part of a national federated setup. And we need to work together to keep the East Coast aware of what we offer over here.
Yeah, and you and me both, Christina. I seem like I've been doing that for 25 years myself. But anyway, I won't be backing down. You know that. The ICC announced today that the Women's Cricket World Cup, so they've made their schedule in advance of 2023, from 8 teams, 31 matches for the Women's Cricket World Cup. From 2029, 10 teams, 48 matches. And for the T20 World Cup, expanding from 2026. Yeah. Great news today, really, and just shows you the growth in the women's game around the world.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, it did take the ICC a while to get on board, but they've driven a really strong agenda. And unless they're driving equity, it's not really going to work in some countries. So I think we saw at the World Cup here February last year just how exciting it was to seem like Thailand play in the competition and what opportunities there are for other countries. So to keep building is really exciting, and kudos to ICC for keeping on increasing the opportunities for women in the game.
On this International Women's Day, we just wanted to say congratulations, well done in your career so far, and keep up the good work, and thanks for joining Hayes and I tonight.
Thanks very much, and thanks for your support over the years.
Absolute pleasure. Christina Matthews, the WACA CEO, just one of the great ladies that works very hard at the top of her game. We'll clear a commitment on the other side. We are going to get into some AFLW next. Trent Cooper and Daniel Pratt, the two combatants out of the Western Derby on the weekend, will join us next. Welcome back to Sports Day and News Headlines. Gotta love your local. You gotta love the Bottle-O. Trent Cooper and the Frio girls absolutely slaughtered the West Coast Eagles in the AFLW game that I watched firsthand yesterday. They were fluent, they had great movement, good skill, and I thought that maybe the wrong lady won the BOG, but we'll find out what the coach has to say. Trent Cooper, welcome to the show. How are you, mate?
Yeah, very well, very well. Yeah, no, the BOG was an interesting one. Kiara obviously played very well, and her ball use was exceptional, but I don't think, no one's ever kicked 5 goals in the game before of AFLW. There's been 1 haul of 7. And then the next best has been 4. So, yeah, Gemma Houghton may have been a little bit unlucky, but, I think Kiara, give her a couple anyway. So probably no worries with the decision in the end.
She got 3 now, but she played well. But 5 goals, as you said. Between the Bulldogs, West Coast, the Giants and Gold Coast, they kicked 7 goals on the weekend. So when you kick 5 like that, you certainly do deserve it. But you would have been pleased with her response and also that of your other gun forward in Sabrina Duffy. 8 goals between the two, who last week didn't score.
I don't think they scored the previous week either, I think. So they've been a bit quiet on the scoreboard. Overall, their efforts have been good still, so it's just sometimes the forwards just doesn't go your way, but if they keep working week in, week out, then they'll get the rewards, and they definitely did that in the weekend. And Cara Antonio, who has been playing forward, she didn't hit the scoreboard, but I think she's the number one score assist player in the competition now, so she's doing a really good job for us.
You handled the extra numbers a bit better, didn't you? They got numbers behind the ball, and when they had the ball, they had nobody to kick to. So you were able to keep your structure. But did you spend much time throughout the week trying to navigate your way through that? Because you would have been expecting teams to continue to do that.
Absolutely. That was our main focus during the week. And sides have frustrated us in the past and killed us last year. Brisbane do it really well. And West Coast did it in round 2. So that was our main focus for the week, to not be frustrated by that, but to play with a bit of composure. Our natural game style is to go fast, but to maybe go slow at times. So for me, that was the most pleasing aspect, that we did manage to slow things down and still use the ball really well. So that'll stand us in good stead for when we play some of the good sides who try to do that against us in the next few weeks.
Hey, Trent, something I wasn't aware of that I saw in the paper was your backline players, all cross-coders coming across from a different sport. How difficult has that been to navigate as a coach, trying to teach them all basically a new sport? But you must be proud as punch of the way they're playing.
Yes, I think sometimes it's easier because they're so open to learning. So some of them have played footy as well. So like Matilda Sargent has played a lot of footy coming through. But yeah, Anne Stannett, when she got on our list, she was a blank canvas, had never played footy before, and so she's just a sponge and always wanting to learn. And you can teach from scratch. So I know that Gary Gibbonson has just absolutely loved working with the backs, and They're a formidable unit now, and they bring in different elements of their sport. So Janelle Cuthbertson, being a tennis player, she reads the cues really early of where the ball is going to go. And then, yeah, the soccer players like Stannett and Gooch just know how to keep their feet and keep the ball in front of them. So, the different skills, and I don't know where Emma O'Driscoll netball helps her much, because she doesn't play like a netballer, that's for sure. She's all about the contact, but... it's a really good mix that they've brought together, and they're a very tight group now, back one, that's for sure.
Speaking of a good mix, you must be really pleased with the work in combination of Mim Strom and Roxy Roo. I mean, Roxy, we spoke about her kicking last week. She booted a couple straight again this week. She is certainly one of the better kickers in the competition, in my opinion. But the work in tandem that those two are doing is invaluable.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Pair of 19-year-olds as well, holding our ruck together. I thought it was Mim's best game for the year. She's really building nicely. She had an ankle injury, so she missed the last 3 or 4 weeks of pre-season, and basically played round one off nothing. So she's just getting better and better. And, yeah, Roxy, she's obviously a really good forward, really dangerous, but it's really good for her to free up and run around in the ruck for 5 minutes a quarter. It really helps her get into the game. Sometimes in a forward it doesn't happen, so it's working really well for us. And yeah, the most exciting part of that is that they're both 19.
Now, when I was at West Coast and Freo came into the competition, we used to love beating them, and we beat them for a long time before they actually got a chance to actually get even. Are you enjoying this at the moment, given what you did to West Coast yesterday, to have bragging rights in this city?
it is really important that we sort of keep winning against West Coast. I think the girls have got really good rivalry with them, and a lot of them are really good friends as well. They play together at their Waffle W clubs, but I think when you got such a close rivalry, as you would know back in the day, you don't want to be part of that first loss. So I think that drives our girls to make sure that that we can keep, in this case, little sister in their place for a little while, and we know that they're going to build, and they're going to come hard at us every time. But at the moment, it's definitely nice to keep that one up over them.
Now, you're doing a great job, mate. Thank you very much for joining us tonight here on Sports Day. Take care. Good luck.
No worries. Thanks, boys.
And straight from Trent Cooper into the West Coast Eagles, Daniel Pratt joins us, the AFLW coach. G'day, Pratty. How are you going?
Yeah, not too bad, fellas. Just licking the wound. So, ready to get back on the horse again.
Yeah, wasn't that pretty, was it, mate? And look, from what I saw sitting in the commentary box, I wasn't working, so I had a good chance to see the girls in action. They just seemed to not want to kick the footy. I was actually holding my foot up there a few times and just imploring the girls to kick the ball.
Yeah, we've been working through a few things with our game style, and one of them has been on when we can handball and take the game on and when we need to kick. So for the first quarter, we got that balance right. We just probably didn't get reward for effort, and we were able to own some field position. And then, when Freo's pressure, was sustained and even increased, we probably just overdid it a bit and missed some easy fundamentals as well, just to give them opportunity to get out and actually look to kick. So it's still a work in progress, obviously, but, it was frustrating times for obviously the spectators, and also our players. We want to get better.
Yeah. I just thought that, Pratty, particularly in that first quarter when you really had your chance, I mean, there was quite easily where you could have been in front, but it was that continual handball that seemed to create more pressure. When there was a couple of opportunities, I thought, to kick, it's like a few of the girls aren't backing themselves in, or they're not confident enough to do it.
Yeah, we've been working through what our game style needs to look like for our personnel, and what's going to make us really competitive and things like that. And we're going to have to use the ball by hand at times. And we only introduced that probably 2 or 3 weeks ago, maybe a month ago. So we're going to have the ups and downs with it. And hopefully we keep training the right drills during the week to get that balance right. And I think when we do get it right, we really threaten. But against quality teams like Freo and Adelaide, Brisbane, these teams who are at the top, in the top half of the ladder, their pressure is sustained. So if you do make a mistake, it can lead to another mistake and another mistake at the moment. So we're working really hard on that.
I'm sorry to be a little bit critical, but I suppose we've got to pick the eyes out of it while we can. Now, there was, as the game wore on, and it looked like Freo had three or four players behind the ball, because when the girls actually did start to kick the footy a bit longer, it was like a four-on-one. Was that something that you were conscious of, or what was the reason why there were so many of those Dockers players that were behind the footy, so to speak?
Yeah, it was. We were conscious of it. We lost our forward structure a little bit. It actually happened in the game when we played them last time at South Freo Oval there as well. So Fremantle Oval, sorry. So I think just when you lose field position and everyone's trying to help, which we did through that part of the game, we're stuck in our D50 a bit. The forwards come down, or the mids come further down, the forwards come further down, and when we did get it through, we just struggled to reset at times. But I guess just with the, our inexperience, that's going to happen. Probably what's pleasing is that everyone's trying to help, but sometimes in the long run it doesn't actually help. So that's been kind of education a couple of times now, so hopefully we start to see less and less of that each week.
How many more Irish girls would you like to bring into this team? Because collectively they had their best game. The Kelly sisters, Neve, was very good. And also McCarthy, who's had a few little niggles in recent times. But as a collective, the Irish girls played very well.
Yeah, they did. They, it's great having them here. You know, they compete really hard. They, probably the benefit having them at the moment with our inexperience is that they're really experienced players in their own sport, so they're playing, competitive sport in their own country at a really high level. They understand the ebbs and flows of sport and the game and the momentum. And I think that having them at the moment, when we need someone to fight the fight, those girls are able to do that at the moment. And one of our challenges is going to be to continue to, grow that number. If it's only three, for example, with the Irish girls, we need to get that to 8 to 9 to 10 players. To help manage those momentum swings and hopefully play our game style for longer. So we're really pleased with them. They're professionals. They want to learn the game, footy, as much as they can. They're really diligent. So it's no surprise to me that they were three of our best on the day.
So is there potential for you to get more Irish girls, given you're going to have to find a way to try and catch up in this competition, because through the draft you'll get some and there'll be natural evolution of some of your younger players, but you might have to continue to look outside the box?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, with the way the competition got set up, it's made it difficult to, without bringing in really young talent, to build that talent at times. So you do, the Irish girls are one solution, but, some of those girls have only played footy for 2 years. If we bring in more, they're their first year of footy. So to have to rely on that is difficult, and just how it's been, the competition's been set up through that. The AFL, it's made that difficult to manage at the moment. So I think they're aware of it, and they're trying to find ways to hopefully even some of that stuff up, which would be great.
Well, it'll be a little bit even this week, mate, and hopefully we see a little bit a better performance from your girls when it comes to another new team into the competition, Geelong. They've yet to win a game, so hopefully out at Mineral Resources Park, mate, you can have a very different feeling this week.
Yeah, well, I think the game on the weekend obviously puts a big dent in their confidence. Obviously playing a quality team like Freo, and they punish you like that. We need to get back on the horse really quickly and get in a position where we can compete this weekend and give ourselves an opportunity to win another game. I've been relatively pleased with our commitment to the cause for the whole season. Probably it was a bit of a hiccup on the weekend, which isn't surprising with where we're at the moment, but it's just not ideal to have it before playing against teams that are around you. So we'll work hard on build that barrier of confidence back up this week, and hopefully we can get some good results.
Thanks, mate, for joining us tonight.
In the coming weeks.
Good on you.
Thanks, guys. Cheers.
Thanks a lot, Pratty. Daniel Pratt there here on Sports Day. And, I reckon the West Coast Eagles can beat Geelong. Geelong are in the same zone. And these are another one of the new teams in the competition. When you look at Richmond and Gold Coast, West Coast and Geelong, who've all been introduced, they are all struggling, Hayes. They've won two games between the four of them.
They certainly are. There's a big difference. What about Sam Kerr, Carl? Do you think she'll ever come back and finish her career in the AFL? at some stage?
No, I don't. I mean, why would you? If she can play the round ball game for as long as she can, big bucks. I mean, compared to playing in the AFLW, unless it was like the men's game, which I don't see it being like the men's game in the time that she's probably got left, given her age, no, I don't, mate. And I would encourage her to stay and play the game she's playing for as long as she can, because she's bloody good at it. Great range, friendly service. They're independently owned by the locals. Got to love your local. You got to love the Bottle-O. We'll be back with Kia's Top 7 and what happened on this day for Barron O'Day. Welcome back to Sports Day. Now, Kia's Top 7, the Kia Sorento winner of the Car Sales Car of the Year. Hayes has left it up to me this week, and I've gone my top 7 players out of the games that I've watched out of the course of the weekend. And I thought that Jack Loney for the Saints, really good. Kicked 4 goals. He was instrumental in a few others as well and got the job done for his team. Jordan Clark, now a good comeback. He got injured last year. Really good, skilled young West Australian player. He had 29 disposals. Didn't quite finish off with his shots on goal. Kicked 1 goal too, but played a really good game for the Cats in their late win over Essendon. Dan Houston, now 34 disposals and a goal playing for Port Adelaide. Brilliant game. They absolutely pumped Adelaide. Adelaide are going nowhere fast. Marcus Bontempelli, 32 disposals, 3 goals won today. He was the difference between the Western Bulldogs and Melbourne. Liam Ryan, he was the difference when it came to the score sheet in the derby that I broadcast yesterday here on 6BR. Should have been 5 goals, 3 goals too. A lot of metres gained early in that game and set it up early for the West Coast Eagles. At number 2, Jacob Kaczynski, a bloke who I know bugger all about. 6 goals, 3 though for the Hawks against North Melbourne. And it could have easily been 9. So well done to him. And one at number 1 for our Kia Top 7 is Jaden Short. 43 disposals for Richmond and over 1,000. That's right, 1,000 metres gain, which is so highly rated these days in the game of AFL. For the 7-seat Kia Sorento, which has been crowned the Car Sales Car of the Year, we go to On This Day for Barron O'Day because the little things are everything.
On this day, Carl, in 1986, Martina Navratilova became the first tennis player to earn $10 million. And on this day last year, I mentioned it before, Australia defeated India by 85 runs in the T20 Women's World Cup in front of 86,174 fans. What a moment it was.
Yeah, it's an unbelievable number of people, isn't it? For Barron O'Day, don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. Western Force return to HBF Park this Friday, the 12th of March, for one of the biggest games of the season. Tickets at Ticketmaster, particularly coming off the back of what they did on the weekend with their 2016 victory over the New South Wales Waratahs. Get in and get yourself some of those tickets, and Hayes and I will be back from 6 o'clock tomorrow for another busy day in sport. We'll see you then.